Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needlework artists. And this is the midweek show. I probably should mention that, that happens on Wednesdays as opposed to the one that happens on Sundays. So there we go for that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Wednesday show.
Yep. Stitch Hour tonight. Krista West of Avlia Folk Embroidery will join us. She has three pillow designs, new ones. Yes, I have the kits in my hot little hand, and they're beautiful.
Oh, jealous. Oh, jealous. Jealous, jealous.
She sent them to give away, though, so, yeah.
All right. Okay, well, now I'm not so jealous.
But I do have them. I have, she sent one of each as a kit and one of each as a chart, so tonight we'll give away the three kits. Since Krista's going to be with us, they're beautiful pillows. Yeah, they really are. And so we're going to talk about that, talk about some fabrics. And then I also asked her to send photos of how she uses her designs in her house. Because that's one thing that, you know, all of her stuff is made, or just about all of it is made to be used in the house. You know, put it under a planter, on a table or something. So I have a whole bunch of pictures of how she uses her stuff in her house. I thought that would be good inspiration for people. So,
yeah. Now, did you see her latest design? I think it's called Sea of Light. I don't think she's putting it out until January. It's the blue and white piece.
Yes.
Oh, that's just fantastic.
Yeah, she's just a machine, isn't she?
She is. And then her explanation of why she changes designs on her YouTube. Yeah. She's just, yeah, she's a machine, but she does beautiful stuff. Just beautiful stuff. Yeah. It's going to be fun to talk to her tonight.
And I don't feel like she gets caught in a rut with her designs.
No. You know,
where it's variations on a theme. She's always finding new areas, and that's what's fun.
Yeah, it's just they're beautiful pieces, and I like it that you can use them, that they're meant to be used.
Yeah, yeah. Because as have been said many times, how many things can you hang on a wall? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Because the designs are made so that there's a blank spot to put the flower arrangement or the whatever. Yeah.
Right. And to use like the Easter basket covers that they use in the Greek Orthodox Church. I mentioned it to my daughter who is attending a church. She said, oh yeah, we bring food on Easter Sunday and have it kind of blessed. It's kind of a little church thing. And I was like, oh, then you'd like one of these things.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Yeah. It's just really cool stuff that she does. So she's going to be with us tonight. Join us, ask questions. She'll have, we all know she is a sharing lady, so she'll tell you anything to help you out. So join us for that. And we will have those three new pillow kits in the drawing. Those are going to be released October 1. So you'll be 3 or 4 days ahead of the release seeing them. So yay for that. Sunday's guest, Nicole Vogelsinger of Wild Boho. Ho, there's another one.
Yes. One of my libraries had one of her books, so I went and checked it out. It very cool designs. If you haven't seen any of her books,
no,
and very nice. And she does a great job, I think.
Does your library have any books that are not embroidery or needlework that you haven't requested?
Yeah, you know, they have all sorts of books.
I mean, it's got to be the best collection in the country of needlework books other than the San Francisco School or something like that.
You know, they're really good. But they have a wide variety of books, you know, the nice thing.
Okay.
But yeah.
So Nicole's book, very good. Worth getting, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Recommend it. And I'm looking forward to her new one coming out. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, Wild Boho is her company name, and I don't know if this is a good term, but I call it free-form embroidery, where she'll put a piece of cloth and a hoop and just start embroidering, but she has a real eye for it. Beads, she uses beads and all kinds of stuff, yeah.
Right. And she's offering classes, too, now, too, which I think is great, Zoom classes. So
Yeah, I love the way she'll take a printed fabric and then use embroidery to enhance what's printed on the fabric.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so cool. Yep. So
So no fear of the blank canvas. That's you know, a huge fear when you're starting on a piece. You know, oh, I've got this big white piece of fabric. What am I going to do? She says, just take another piece of fabric that has something on it and start stitching on it.
Yep.
Perfect.
No prick and pounce or anything. Just have at it. Yeah. So that's Sunday, Nicole Vogelsinger, Wild Boho. That was fun. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Beth and I got invited by Jessica Grimm to their medieval embroidery study group. And this is a group, they have to take her goldwork class.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, which I think is a fairly advanced class because these were clearly advanced women in this group. So anyway, she was kind enough to invite us. Wow, that was cool.
That was fascinating.
It was a stump work 3D embroidery, a piece from the 1500s of Saint George slaying the dragon.
And
wow.
Yeah. We really dissected it. She took a lot of photos. She went to some museum and took a ton of photos of it and lots of close-ups. And then we just started discussing it. Well, what do you think is happening here? Why do you think this is here? Anybody have any idea of why this is like the face? How was the face made was something that was discussed. That was great. Just fascinating.
Yeah, I found there were several things I found interesting. One was the amount of glue that was used in that piece, because at least in my mind, you know, to use glue on needlework you want to last would be kind of a no-no. Though, right. You know, the Japanese would say, well, we use that wheat paste or whatever glue. But, you know, this piece, there were several places where glue was used. And that's from the 1500s, so it kind of held up, you know?
Right. And, you know, all the horrors, oh, don't use glue. But, you know, I'm wondering if there's aren't certain places where it's, you just have to. You just got to use it, so.
Yeah, and some of the ladies were talking about pieces where glue was just basically slathered on the back. Old ones that they had studied or seen or whatever. So it kind of took the edge off of my hesitation to involve glue in any kind of a finishing project.
Yeah.
The right kind of glue. I mean, I don't think you go get Elmer's glue all and start using it, but
no. And cause I when I finish ornaments that I know one day my children will look at and say, okay, these are trash. I use glue in the finishing because I know one day that they're going to end up in Goodwill or the trash can because, you know, but I've used them. We've loved them, you know, time to move on. But yeah, I use glue in those because it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
And I haven't noticed any ill effect, the years I've been stitching it. But if I want to be careful about it, I do lace it.
Yeah, I mean, there's at some point you don't want to use it, but
yeah,
and I don't think you break out the bottle of Gorilla Glue either. You got to be kind of careful.
No, absolutely not. But that was just interesting too. Yeah, how much glue they used, wooden forms, which I knew they used, but I just hadn't given it that much thought that, you know, they use that for making the figures and. Wood has acid in it, you know, and I hesitate to use wood because of that. So that was interesting to me. Where they placed the wood form.
Yeah. There was one spot where the, St. George's knee, the cloth had worn away, been torn away or whatever. And yeah, we could see the sticks in there that made up his thigh and his lower leg. And, It was interesting. I mean, they're just in there as an anchor point because his body was all stuffed. I'd love to know what he was stuffed with.
Yes. And yeah, that would be interesting, to a CT scan of him.
Yeah, that was the thing that I think we had more questions than answers, because, museums, limited staff, limited resource. So to take something like that and go get a CT scan of it, yeah, I don't think that's happening. But imagine what you'd learn, just,
Yeah, and that would help you with so many other pieces where you don't know how it was made.
The other thing I took out of it that is purely perspective is something like this. They talked about like his knees and his shoulders clearly had something on them, and the assumption is that it was metal pieces, either silver or gold or whatever, that had been removed to be melted down for for sale.
Right, money.
The perspective of this was something that was put together and stitched by someone who was rich, because of the background was velvet
Right.
that somebody had cut, and that had, as Jessica pointed out, it wasn't crushed, so it was clearly new, had not been used, and other things in there that made it clear that someone who was well off of means made this thing. And when you first look at it, you go, well, that's just a bunch of old cloth and threads. What's the big deal in terms of our view of someone who's well off? But in those times, to be able to even get those kinds of materials was just a big deal.
And especially the velvet, like when we talked to Claire Hunter about the Anne Queen of Scots, the velvet was so precious. It was only made certain places. It was very valuable. So again, she brought that out again, and how much, and then they imitated the velvet pattern at a, I think she called it like a mantle, or a, that was kind of in the background in Ornouet. So they imitated the velvet pattern in what we would consider, a very highly technical gold work skill, the Ornouet. And that was just fascinating to me. But we, yeah. So, and I think we forget, we live in a time where cloth isn't as precious. You can get it anywhere. But then, back then, it was much more valuable. It had to be handmade. Everything was made by hand, or the machinery was much more labor intensive. So, yeah, just interesting stuff.
Yeah, another thing I took out of that was that, because I asked the question, there's a pattern in the velvet behind St. George. And I wondered how that pattern was achieved, whether the velvet was plucked out of the ground, or Ornouet stitching over it, or just what it was. And Jessica and a couple of the other ladies made it quite clear that questions about velvet was a complete different world. I didn't realize it was, to me it was as ground cloth, it was part of this thing, but apparently you could go off, because they gave a name of somebody who has a book on velvet, but apparently, yeah, you can go off and study velvet all by itself for a long time, and that was news to me.
Yeah, interesting. We just don't think of things that way. We just think, oh yeah, that's a ground cloth, so away you go, just stitch on it.
Oh yeah,
But
like yeah, 'cause would we worry about a piece of velvet? Nah.
nah,
Go down to
no.
Joann's, get another piece. What's the big deal? Yeah.
Right. But that's not this kind of velvet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that was it was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed and appreciate being invited to that, because and you could tell ladies there knowledgeable. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That was good. It was really
It was a
good.
lot of fun. A lot of
Yeah.
fun.
And and it doesn't happen, Jessica travels to museums quite a bit, and so this is one where is under glass, and she said it was up high, and she took the time to photograph it from all angles so we could see as much detail as she could generate, shooting through a glass box. And, you know, that tremendous effort, and then to come back and share it with her advanced students is very special. Right. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, I was so glad we were invited, you know, learned so much.
Yeah. Very cool. Yep. Yeah. I wish. Yeah. And that's the other thing. I wish we had a photo, but she said, you know, the museums might get a little, funny.
A little huffy.
So it will remain in the private sector, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Too bad.
Yep. Okay. The Mississippi River Valley EGA chapter, of which you have some affiliation.
Yes. We're going to have our needlework show, and, it's called Here My Work Forever Stands. And actually it's based, they pulled the name from, a chart that they had done. I can't even remember how many years ago they had a sampler made up and the chart to go with it. So they're basing it, the name of the show, on it. We're displaying, one of our members has finished it. I haven't, but one member has, and it's going to be on display. And then we've got like over 100 pieces, and it's going to be at the Moline Library, public library in Illinois, if you're in the Quad Cities area. I want to come see about 100 different needlework pieces made by members of the local EGGA chapter. It's it should be quite, I'm bringing things. I'm going to be there to help demonstrate, but that's in someone else's hands. Oh, running that show.
Oh, I thank thought this goodness. Was your chapter.
It is my chapter, oh, okay. But I'm not in charge of the show, thank goodness.
Oh, I see. You got smart.
I had a volunteer, and we said, yes, you want to volunteer? Yes, I will support you. I will be there. I will volunteer to help you. But no, it's, it is our chapter. And I know some of the pieces that will be displayed are just fantastic. I'm hoping one of the ladies had done, it was some impressionist piece, and I'm hoping she was going to allow us to display it, but I don't know. She might not. It took her so long to finish. She hates to let it out of her hands, of thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, but.
But 100 pieces, that's impressive.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. All sorts of different techniques. We'll have beading, needlepoint. I think some people are bringing wool applique, cross stitch, embroidery. So a wide range, a very wide range.
Well, so, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now isn't your library that you?
No, this is the Moline Library. Mine is the Cordova Library.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Your own private library. Yeah.
My own private library. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And then there's some demonstrations too.
Yeah. So, we'll bring our needlework, just various things that we're going to, just show that we're on stitching. People bring cross stitch, embroidery, just something that we're currently working on to show people how it's done. So just to show that people that people are still doing cross stitch. People are still doing surface embroideries. People are still doing needlepoint. I think sometimes we're such a individual craft, you know, people do it in their homes by themselves. They don't know that there's the guild out there, that there's an embroidery guild, and we get together and we meet and we stitch and we teach new techniques to people. And that's what we're really trying to do, is to show people what the guild offers. Yeah. So there's going to be correspondence courses that people have taken and finished will be on display, or workshops that we've done, study groups that we've done, finished. So just to show what the guild has to offer mainly.
Yeah. Well, I hope you have a good crowd, because those things are a lot of work to put together.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Just getting pieces to show, and to get 100 of them is impressive. And then you got to get tables and cover the tables and stands to hold stuff up and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing that'll be on display is something that, our guild made when I first moved here. So we moved here in 97, I want to say. And one of our members was, a national teacher, and I think she designed the piece, if I'm not mistaken. But they stitched a banner, and it is gorgeous. I think I put a couple of stitches on a tree is all I did. So I wasn't quite as advanced as the other people. But it's beautiful. The banner itself is just gorgeous. Highly recommend just going to see it.
Yep. Cool stuff. So that's 10 to 3 on October 1.
Yes.
Coming right up. Yay.
Coming right up. Yay, Saturday.
Can you take pictures? I know sometimes there's copyright issues. Like, can you take pictures or a video and show us?
I don't know. I'll have to ask.
Because even if you just walked around with your phone, you know, that would be cool.
I will ask those in charge.
Yeah, that would be neat to see what people are doing. Yeah, we put that on a Wednesday night show and people can look at it. Mm-hmm.
Good plan. Good plan.
Those who can't make it to Moline.
Moline, Illinois. Don't want to come to the quad cities for a weekend.
Yeah, that. Though I'm sure this time of year it's beautiful.
It is. And the Eagles are back. The bald Eagles are back.
There, see? All right. Two things to do. All right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Get in your cars, folks. Let's go. Yep. So that's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Impressive. The mystery in Saint-Tropez.
Have you stitched any? Have you stitched?
Oh, you didn't see my posting.
No, I didn't.
That hurts.
Sorry. I'll have to go and look. I'm hanging my head in shame.
That suggests you have a life. So, no, I'm not hurt at all. I got some football stitching in Sunday. And so I got the, what did I have here? Yeah, I got the center part stitched and the long diagonal stitches. And then there's the threads that tie the long diagonal stitches. And so I did three different threads to, cause the first thing was I had number 5 pearl, silk pearl. And that was going on, the long diagonal threads were done in number 8 silk pearl. So a dark maroon, looks like a maroon to me. Yeah, it is. And so then you do this little tying pattern over them. So right, I grabbed the number 5 pearl and I thought, well, that'll certainly work. And it's a cream off-white color. Boy, did that look clunky. So then I thought, all right, I've got a number 8 pearl off-white. Well, that looked better. Because that was in the same ball game with the underlying stitches, but it was off white, so it was a very distinct contrast. And then I had kind of a blue—I guess it's a blue silk lame braid.
Oh,
kind of a teal, more of a teal color, I would say. Listen to me naming colors. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was probably orange, and I don't realize it. But anyway, I put that on, and that seemed to work better. But then I was looking in our stitching group, the Saint-Tropez stitch group on Facebook, and a couple people one person used the same thread to do the tying work. So that just added texture, which I liked that. But then I thought, wait a minute, I think I have some petite silk lame or petite very velvet.
Oh.
And so I'm going to dig that out, and I'm going to try that now. So this is just part of the experiment. I mean, this is such a small little part of the center, but part of the experiment. So, yeah, I think I'm going to try petite very velvet and see how that looks on there.
Yeah. I'm jealous. I haven't touched mine. But I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking about it because I keep saying, how can I tie down that ribbon floss that I put in there that's just so shiny and slick.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if I shouldn't just put a very thin pearl on top just to give it a little less shine. Because it is, to me, in person, it's very shiny.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that reflects on the photographs, but yeah, in person it's shiny, and I don't know, it might be too much shine going on there. Although, you know, I should do all four sections in different ways like you're doing, and play with it a little bit.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I thought, hey, I'll, I mean, I stitched it. I knew I probably wouldn't get any stitching in the next day, which would have been Monday. So I thought, well, I'll just stitch it, and then I can come back and look at it and see what I think in a couple of days. So,
right.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, that's part of it. That's the whole goal, is to learn. So that's
right.
That's what we're
doing. That's why we're doing this.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Right. And that's kind of the fun part of it, is seeing what works and what doesn't. And, you know, just if you change just something just a little bit, you know, what happens?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on here? So.
Yeah, because that underlying thread is a, you know, it's a silk pearl, so it's got a nice sheen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a elegance. It's the Rainbow Gallery elegance. Kathy Ray picked out some nice colors. I'm liking them. So then I thought, well, if I have a maroon, very velvet, then that would be a matte, dull finish laying over the shiny. So.
Right.
We'll see. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like very velvet too. I think it's a fun thread.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, that's where I'm at while football was going on. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's stitching good time and football. Yeah.
Can't beat it. Oh. Yep.
So do you get more stitching? So do you get more stitching done during football season, do you think?
No.
Oh.
Not necessarily. No. No, and the reason this happened was I worked a lot Friday and Saturday and Sunday morning with the goal of having from noon Sunday all the way through till I went to bed, where I didn't really have any immediate obligations.
Okay.
See, so I was able to get the time, and mm-hmm. That's how it happened. So,
okay.
Yeah. It's kind of the way it is for me.
Well, at least you got some stitching time. I was beginning to wonder.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I could survive as long as you do without having a little bit of stitching time.
I don't always have a choice. So,
yeah, I understand. Yeah. I understand.
So, yeah, I pondered away at it and found myself a chunk of time, you know, uninterrupted time where it's just me, TV, and thread and needle. And
right.
Yeah.
So right.
Worked out great. Now I got to get another chunk. Because now I'm fired up. See, now I've got three options laying there, and I think the best option yet to be done. So I know I have several options of very velvet, so I got to see what I have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good that you were able to get that time. It kind of makes you excited about stitching again when you can get a good hunk of time. You know, just.
Right.
Sometimes I only have a few minutes. I have 15, 20, and it's like, I just want to spend a day stitching.
Yeah. Well, see that, you know, we've talked many times about just 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, and that works, say, if you're doing a sampler.
Right.
But for this kind of thing where I had to experiment, I just really feel like I need to have a chunk of time so that I can keep the thought process going.
I agree. And for me, it's, you know, you have to pull out all those threads. So you have to make sure you have all those threads out, all your options there, and be ready to experiment. So I'm working on my lizard canvas, and I haven't had hours, a couple of hours, just to say, okay, I'm just going to work on this. And I finally took some time on Sunday and said, okay, I've got time. I'm going to work on it. But I had to pull various threads, and I'm doing the claws on both the gecko and the bearded dragon, and my experiments didn't work. I tried the, I think it's called patina or something. It's a rayon pearl.
Oh yeah.
I think it's no longer. I don't think they make it anymore. I don't think Rainbow Gallery. But it. It, I tried a bullion knot. It didn't work. I tried doing a woven bar. It didn't work. And I really think it's the thread. I think I need to find a different thread and then try again stitching.
Yeah.
But I needed a hunk of time. I couldn't just say, well, I'm just going to try a bullion knot here. You know?
Oh, yeah. No.
No. No. It took me time. And I'm still not satisfied. I still have to play with it some more.
Yeah, because in the bullion knot alone, it's how many wraps. Well, this is two too many. This is one too few. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it just looks, it just doesn't look right. I am going to be ripping those out right now. Because you have four little pads on this thing. So I'm leaving them for now, but, I know they're going to have to come out, the two experiments I did, because they just don't, they look messy. It just does not look right. So back to the drawing board.
Yeah. I saw your post. And I was doing research for another upcoming guest. And this person does a lot of, Michelle Morgan is her name. She's upcoming. It's going to be amazing. I think it was her, where she had some kind of a tube-like goldwork thread that she passed a thread through and used that to anchor. And it, when I saw that, I thought about your post where you showed what you had, were trying. And I wondered if you could get, real small gold work, like copper or something that not shiny gold, because I don't think that would work, but something like that to make those claws. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And now I'm thinking back to Jessica Grimm's The Claws on the Dragon.
Yes.
And I think those were wrapped. I should have looked, asked her. I wasn't thinking about the dragon. I wasn't thinking about my lizard at the time when I looked at those claws. But now I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking, I wonder if those just look like they were just a thread that was wrapped somehow.
Mm-hmm. I think they were wrapped, yeah. But yeah, I thought about that, and then I was going to dig out the goldwork threads I have just to see, because I know I have a copper and like a green, and to see if there's something that are hollow that you could pass a filament thread or something through,
right,
to anchor.
Right.
And it may be completely out of character for everything else that's on that canvas, but I just wondered if that was an option.
Well, and it might work. Where it might work is on the bearded dragon, because he has those same sort of pads on his feet, kind of like little claws on his feet. And I'm wondering, I should go look. I might have even beads that they're not shiny necessarily, but they're colored too. I might have some green that are more matte and that might work, that are long enough, but they're not bendable. Bend, you can't see me. I'm bending my finger in the shape of a claw. But
oh,
you really
I visualize
see
it.
That.
Oh, I can visualize it right here. Yeah.
Good.
Yep, I see it. Oh yeah, I see.
You see it. See, for things like that, you need time, because now you got to, I've got to go dig through, find those beads, dig through myself, bring them and spread them out and see if that you got to. And basically, you have to put them on. There's no other way. I can't just look at it and say, yeah, these will work or these won't work. I have to put them on the canvas.
Yeah.
And try it.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's no other way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you got to put them on the canvas, because you got to see them in the context of what's around it.
Right, right. Especially with all the colors going on in that canvas, you don't want it to clash.
Yeah. Well, if you want to try gold work and you don't have this what you want, let me know. I'll dig mine out and we'll see what we can put together.
Or if
you don't, you'll only hurt my feelings and, No, I doubt that.
I really doubt that.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking because you made me think there's got to be something else that you could use that would be, they could use as a bead that's wrapped like that.
Yeah.
It's bendable.
Right. Mm. There's an option out there somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. But yep. That canvas is close to being done. So that's the one that keeps calling my name. When I have a hunk of time, I want to work on it because I'm so close. Yeah. I really am close on it. So.
Yep. Yeah. And this process made me, I actually wrote down some little notes, thoughts when you're doing this kind of experimenting that at least that they went through my mind as I was sitting there Sunday afternoon watching football. And one is, if you're doing this kind of experimenting, mentally, if you're one of those who's stingy with thread, mentally you got to change your thinking, and you got to be prepared to just use some thread that gets thrown away.
Right.
If you think that precious little 6 inches of thread is going to go into your canvas, don't count on it, because you know, it'll probably get frayed and worn as you're experimenting, and just be prepared to pitch it. And that, what goes with that is make sure you have enough thread.
Right. Yeah. And that's my rayon thread. I don't have a ton left.
Yeah.
But that's all right. I don't think I'm going to use it. It's just not working. But I was worried about that. I was going to use it someplace else. And I thought, no, I need to save this because I think I'm going to need it for these plots. So yeah, you have to think about that when you're doing a project like this.
Yeah.
Is the thread out of, no longer available, you know?
Right.
Make sure you have enough.
Watch your dye lots. Watch everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
4 feet and two of them are a different dye lot and they don't match. And then you're just annoyed.
Yeah.
So, right. But then the other thing, and because I did it, was if you experiment with a stitch or, for instance, a claw or something, write down the length of thread that you used.
Yes.
So that you're not always guessing. Because the first one, like when I was tying these diagonal things, the first one that I, well, actually when I did the long diagonals, which are all of maybe... Yeah, an inch and a smidgen. The first time I had just enough, but I'd written down the length that I used. I just made a guess. And so then I added 2 inches. And then that way I knew that for the other three of the four, that then I would have enough thread at the end that I'm not trying to scrimp, you know, and that I can finish it off And I think that I do that a lot, write down right in the chart what the length of thread you use, particularly for counted canvas work. If you do a Jessica, write that length down, because if there are three more, you'll be really glad that you wrote that down and that you can cut off a length that will get the job done without scrimping.
And I try to remember to measure them with my, you know, whatever your... on needlepoint, it's easy because your stretcher bars are, you know what your size your stretcher bars are.
Right.
And you use that as you don't even need to go get a tape measure or anything. You just got one right there and say, okay, yeah, I'm using two lengths. So this is 16 inches or whatever you're using, especially for Jessica. Oh my word.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing worse than doing a Jessica and being one inch short. It's like, oh, geez.
What do they do?
Yeah, and they say you, well, if you're short, you can start another one and finish it off. I just cut it out and start over with a longer thread. I've never been happy with that. So
It's much better. It's much better to go all the way from the beginning. But yeah, you're right. I haven't been doing that on this piece, and I thought about it while I was making the claws. It's like I should be measuring how much I'm using on this.
Yeah,
but I didn't.
it's a real big help. You don't think of it at the time, but it is really a big help to know that length, and especially then if you don't get back to it for 3 or 4 days, then that's how long it was. Yeah,
right. Good right. Got the little note there.
Yep,
helping you along.
So then the other thing, and this is probably obvious, but if you are stitching, doing a stitch, either on a doodle cloth or in this case where I put three different ones on the actual piece, don't finish off the back of the thread. Pull it through to the front or something so it's out of the way, but you can just, because it makes it easier to undo it. Because if you finish off the thread and clip it, then you got to go dig that out of wherever you finished it off and just leave the long strand at the end and pull it through to the top so you know where it's at. And it's just a whole lot easier if you got to pull it out.
And again, on the bullion knots, I was for sure those would work. And I was like, put one in and it didn't work. So I took the whole thread out and started again, thinking it was my tension. I was doing something wrong. And I was like, you're saying that made me think, yeah, I should have just done a waist knot on these silly things because they're going to be a pain to remove.
Right, right.
And they are coming out.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is use away waist knots. Even for instance, on these tying things, I'm anchoring the thread under the long, there's these long diagonal side by each threads. So I'm anchoring the threads underneath it. You'll never see them. But for this experimenting, using away or waist knots so that you can easily undo that end without having to dig into something that is going to stay just to pull out something you were experimenting with. And
right.
Yeah, you just cut it off, pull it through, and you're done. But yeah, set yourself up so you can pull it out. And then when you go to do the finish thing, you obviously anchor it where it's going to be, where you want it, where it's not visible. But yeah, make it easy for yourself to take it out.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because I'm not looking forward to removing those silly things.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Because it's rayon thread, so I really anchored it. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that stuff's so hard to get anchored so it doesn't come loose. Yeah.
Right, right. And it's just that slick stuff. I love it. When it works beautifully. But yeah. When it doesn't, like, oh.
Not so
start
much.
Again. Not so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, like I said at the top of this list, if you're going to rip something out, check your thread because before you go reusing it. Because if it's like a silk pearl or a pearl at all, you know, they tend to lose their sheen rather quickly. And to use them a second time, a lot of times it's not worth it. And then you'll have that one that'll be a little dull. And then the others that you do for that same stitch elsewhere will have a shine to them. And like I said, just be prepared to throw it away because,
And canvas is a lot tougher on, I think, for people who are doing the Gay Ann Rogers piece and are used to doing cross stitch. You know, if I haven't done a huge amount and I'm removing some of my thread from a cross stitch piece, you know, I'm generally okay. You know, you look at it and it's like, okay, this will be all right. But on the needle point, the canvas is rough on those threads. So putting them in and pulling them out, it adds a whole lot of stress on those threads.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you just got to be a little bit more careful with them.
Yep. And check your needle size. Test different size needles when you're doing this experimenting so that when you do the finished piece, you know what needle to use that opens the hole enough so your thread isn't getting dragged by the canvas.
Right.
Yeah, experiment. Like I was doing one, and this is Congress cloth, and the thread was a little thicker. Oh, it was the number 5 silk pearl, which is obviously thicker.
Right.
But I was using a 24 or 6 needle, and that wasn't big enough. But I knew I was experimenting, so I didn't bother to change it. But now if I go back to use that, I know to go up a needle size to open that hole in the canvas more because it was destroying the silk pearl, but I didn't care because I knew it was going to get thrown away. But, test your needle sizes and write that down, too. This is the needle I use for this thread. And because, mm-hmm. like, when I do especially counted canvas work on my needle minder, I'll have at least 3, if not 4, different needle sizes on there, different threads, you know, different things. And
Right, because it's got to – the needle's got to be right for whatever thread you're using.
Yeah.
Makes a huge difference in needlepoint. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, some people say, well, just use a bigger needle for everything. Well, I don't know. If I don't have to open the hole anymore, I don't like opening it anymore and I have to. So,
well, yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. It slips out too. You've got if you're using a silk purl, you know,
exactly.
Like,
yep.
It's falling out of your needle. That's even worse. You know, just it drives me bonkers. And I'm like, ah.
Oh yeah, that rayon stuff you're using. Oh man.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah, lose your grip on that and right out, and then you got to thread it, and it frays and comes apart on the end, and you got to clip off an end again. Oh, it's a pain in the butt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Looks cool when it's done. Looks very cool when it's done, but yeah.
Right. But working with it, sometimes you're thinking, why am I torturing myself?
Yeah.
I want the effect.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That stuff gets trashed a lot. A lot of people complain, but when it's done and done right, if you can take your time, you really get a cool effect. Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, those were just things that came to mind as I was experimenting there. Particularly for people who've never done counted canvas work. I mean, it applies to really anything, but like cross stitch, you know, once you get going, you usually don't rip things out too much unless you miscount. But these other things, yeah, you just, particularly like this project here, you're just experimenting a lot. So you.
Right. So you need to make adjustments then.
Yep. So that's, there's some tips. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then another thing that came to mind Wednesday night on the show, we had someone in the audience, and of course I don't remember the name, from Newfoundland, and we were gushing over what it would be like to visit that, and she mentioned that she was they were bracing for the hurricane, and yeah, for them, not a normal thing, because usually by the time they get that far north, they lose steam or head out into the ocean. But this one hit them hard. So I hope she's okay, because that sounded like, from what I read, a lot of rain, a lot more rain than they are used to at any level. And so, yeah, I hope she's okay. And, of course, we got all the Florida people with that one.
Right.
It looks like that's going to be a direct hit, particularly in the Tampa Bay area. So, yeah, global warming. But it made me say, all right, when you're in a situation like that, and the other part was when I went to visit my sister 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they were without power for effectively 4 days. And you can't do anything. So you say, all right, I want to stitch. I've got some time. I might as well stitch. Well, equip yourself so that you can.
Right.
And, you know, because it's and then we had talked about the Halo battery and having something with your magnifier light to drive your magnifier light, you know, a battery or something, or if it's sunlight, you can sit in front of a window, but, you know, have something, if you need a magnifier light, have something that will power that for an extended period, or have a project that doesn't require a magnifier and light, that daylight will do the job. But I just envisioned that you could, particularly this time of year and in the spring, set yourself up with a bag that, all right, this is my stormy weather bag when the power goes out, you know, or the heat goes out or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and I think of like where we stitch for my guild at the church doesn't have great lighting, and I try to always remind people you need to bring either a light, you know, or you know, and your magnifier, because there's just no way we can't provide lights for people there.
Right.
And those daylights, we were discussing that, you know, what do you need for a situation like that. So they're really handy, I think, if you have one, something that's rechargeable, that easy to carry around. And aren't they, don't people put them in like those knitting bags?
Right.
Do you think that?
Yeah, there's a semi-hard case that a couple of those foldable magnifier lights, they'll fold right down and go right in there, so they're protected. Yeah, they're and I think it is the daylight one that'll go in there, but yeah, that's worth having. Then it's protected and semi-rigid, so it's not going to get crushed or anything.
Right. And then it's all together. You know where it is. You know, keep it charged up. I think that's the other thing. I think people forget that, you know, you got to keep them charged, or, you know, they're not going to run, or the they're going to end up in trouble.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But I always have something that I can stitch that I can do in the daylight or just with low light, you know, because of camping. You know, I try to take something that's easy to see, because even though we have lights in the camper, you know, it's not the best lighting.
Right.
So it's right. Just nice to have something that you can, that's easy to see, easy to stitch, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
Something simple.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, that's, you're exactly right. Yeah. Camping, in the summer. Yeah. These days that we have the technology that you can take your stitching and have lighting and magnification with you, and you know, sit there in the evening and stitch and chase the bugs away from your light, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But the halo bolt, battery, if you're going to do this kind of stuff, I just really recommend that you get one of these things. It's the Halo 58830. There, you can get them Amazon. You can get them anywhere. But they are one powerful battery that lasts a long time, especially with LED lights. And mine has two USB ports for power, and then has a conventional wall plug port. So you can plug in, you know, the power cube for your LED lights. But really, really a good thing to have. But I think you mentioned, you know, make sure these things are charged. Make sure you also use them.
You know,
haul it out every now and then and use it in place of your regular light, or to power your regular light instead of wall power. Use it. Run it down and recharge it so that you exercise that battery a little bit. Don't let it just sit and then pick it up and go on a trip and go and count on it. Yeah.
Right.
Use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget about that. I forget about, you know, using it, letting it drain all the way down and then, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Cause the reason I bring that up is I remembered I had not used my Halo battery in a long time. And so now it's I'm using it, draining it down. It takes a while, but draining it down and then recharging it, because those things need to be used. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Has to do with something with those batteries and how they work. So I don't understand it all, but I just know that you're supposed to do it.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. And everyone seems to have a different characteristic. I don't care. Just use them and recharge them. Yeah. So anyway, that's, you know, that was something else that came to mind, particularly as you watch the weather and the news. If you get hit, you know, because obviously if you get hit with water and your house is flooded and, you know, the worst happens, the last thing you care about is your stitching. But if you're one of those that just gets heavy rain, but the power goes out and it's out for several days, you know, fix yourself up. And have something to do instead of sitting there fretting over when the power's going to come on. Because that's like at my sister's house, they had a generator. They still have it, actually. But it only was set up to power, and they had a plug in the wall, outside wall of the house. But it was set up to power some of the kitchen wall plugs, the refrigerator, and the secondary refrigerator that they use as a freezer out in the garage.
Right.
And then the pump for their well, because they live kind of out in the country. So you'd run that thing, but it's noisy. And so you'd run it, but then you'd shut it off because, you know, we wanted to talk out on the patio or whatever. But so then when it was running, then everybody would plug in all the things that needed to be charged. And then, okay, it's going to be off in the evening. And so then you'd have power for whatever, and your phone, tablet, whatever it might be. And so in those instances, or, you know, go down to the local store where they have power and leech off of them. But yeah, just I just think, especially now, and you know, like it or not, weather is going to be more severe in the future. You might as well set yourself up so you can enjoy the downtime and get some stitching done.
Right. And then of course, California with their rolling brownouts, you've got right. those going on. So you might want to, you know, it's nice to have the extra power when the grid is not working.
Yeah. California. And then the Texas House of Cards grid, is another one.
Right.
So, yeah. So anyway, it's just, I think worth, you know, having a bag, have a go bag. That this is my severe weather and or travel bag. And when things go haywire, I can just sit on a stitch and relax.
Yeah. Right. Keep yourself calm.
Yeah.
In these
yeah.
crazy times.
Yep. All right. That's going to be it. So October 1, 10 to 3, Moline Public Library, the Mississippi River Valley, Mississippi River Valley EGA chapter, will have their exhibit and demonstrations, Here My Work Forever Stands. So get in on that if you're in the
yes.
Quad Cities area.
Yeah, and I'll try to take a video show on a Wednesday night.
Yep.
So see what we can do about that.
And join us tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern on the YouTube channel for the Krista West visit, where we get to just ogle all of her work. So that's fun.
Yeah.
And Nicole Vogelsinger of Wild Boho will be our guest on Sunday, and that was a delight talking to her. So join us for that.
Sounds great.
I think that's all we got. Thanks for listening.
Bye.